Welcome to Part of My Fandom, where individuals come on to share their fandom. And today we had Eleanor Wagner. She's a paranormal investigator and an author. And she shared some very good stories about paranormal investigating. It was a great interview. I think y'all really gonna enjoy this one. Don't forget, you can find us across all social media platforms at Part of My Fandom. And if you would like to be a guest, come share your fandom, or just want to send me an email or ask a question, you can contact me directly through social media, or you can send an email to partofmyfandom@gmail.com. I really hope you enjoy this interview. Welcome to Part of My Fandom, where we bring on guests to express their passion for their fandom. And my guest today is Eleanor Wagner, who is a Lady Ghostbuster. That's correct? Did I get that right?
Yes, it is.
Lady Ghostbuster and a paranormal enthusiast, right?
Paranormal investigator.
Investigator. Okay. Investigator.
Yeah.
Okay.
And an author of four books.
And an author of four books. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How you doing? Since I just
I'm good. How you doing?
I butchered your intro, so how you doing?
That's all right. I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. So how about this? How about we just let you tell us what you do?
Sure. Well, other than being a stay-at-home mom for many years, I ended up going into the school district and have been a kindergarten aide now for 17 years. So I'm a kindergarten aide by day and a paranormal investigator by night. I've been a writer my entire life. I started writing when I was in grade school, published my first book in 2015, which is a paranormal romance that takes place in the county where I live, and then decided to write a true account haunting series of ghost stories that take place in the county where I live now, which turned into this enormous project because what I thought was going to be one book, I'm going on book three for Sussex County, wrote about an adjacent county, Warren County, and now have folders for probably about five other counties surrounding the area of true life ghost stories that people have shared with me in whether it be a haunted establishment or a haunted home. And people like ghost stories. They've been asking for more. So I'm just going to keep on writing them. But the paranormal investigative team formed when I was writing that very first book in 2019. It's called Sussex County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena. When somebody reached out to me and said, why don't you bring your paranormal team into the Sterling Hill Mines in Ogdensburg, New Jersey? We would love to have you. It's really haunted here. And I was like, yeah, I would love to do that. But I didn't have a paranormal team, so I had to put one together. So I established one by reaching out to people I've made connections with over the years and invited some of the people that I interviewed for the book and started a team. And that was in 2019. And since then, we've grown to about 20 people in the group, and we go to area establishments and local residents and do paranormal investigating if they reach out to me because they have suspicious behavior. They don't know if it's paranormal or not, or just to go and investigate and see what we can find and make that connection with spirit. And so it's been going ever since. Wow. I haven't stopped.
So before we get deep into it, I just have one question. What's scarier, sure, the ghost or the kindergartners?
That's a good question. It depends. It depends on the day, whether they're having a good day or not. When they're off, their rockers, then they can be pretty scary. Trust me.
Yeah, I have, as a father of young children, I got a pair of 7-year-olds, you know, they're first graders now, but.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's why I asked. Yeah. I'm like, I probably take my chance with the ghosts. I can imagine a room.
Sometimes, you know, sometimes it can be the parents that are scary.
Oh yeah. My wife's a teacher. I know all about that too. So.
Oh, okay. So I'm sure you hear it.
Oh yeah. All the time. So I would like to start. Let's start at the beginning. Like, what got you into the paranormal? Did you have experiences when you were a child, or, you know, where did it all start with you?
I did. I've always been sensitive to spirit. And when I was probably about 5 years old, I lived in my home with a ghost and saw him every single night for probably up until I was about 10 or 12, when I finally ended up moving into the basement bedroom when my sister moved out. But from that point on, he came every night into my room. And as a child, you're afraid of something like that because you don't know what it is. And it's scary.
Wait,
and I didn't have parents.
Yeah, an entity that came into your room?
Yeah, it was a ghost that lived in my home, my childhood home. Oh, wow. The home was probably from the 1920s. And it was a male ghost. And he would come from the corner of the living room and walk into the hallway, into my bedroom, and stand at the edge of my bed. And I was terrified. I would hide under the covers, and I'd probably sleep under the covers that way because I never wanted to peek out and look at him. But there were sometimes I would try and run past him and go into my parents' room so I could sleep with them. It was just continuous every night up until I was about, I want to say I was 10 when I finally moved into the basement. But the thing of it is, my parents thought I was just dreaming. So they weren't really like openly receptive to all things ghost. So their answer was, oh, you're dreaming. It was a dream. And I find that in different situations with different people, if they have parents that are nurturing and say, it's okay, it's a spirit that's living in the house. Don't be afraid of it. There's a different reaction from the person on the receiving end, but I didn't have that. My parents just said it was a dream. So I knew it wasn't a dream. I knew I was seeing this and I was afraid. Now, as an adult, I realized that the spirit knew I could see him and was trying to get my attention. But I hear I was a child and I just was scared. So I always say to people when they ask me if I could go back to that house today, I would apologize to him, that spirit, because I wasn't being ignorant or rude. I just didn't understand. Now, as an adult, I do, that I can see and sense spirit. And that's why they're trying to get my attention. So that's where the initial interest came, because I've always been sensitive. But I've always loved scary movies and ghost stories and horror films. And I grew up in the age of Stephen King and Dean Koontz and John Saul. Those are the books I read. So naturally, when I started writing, those are the things I wanted to write about, because that's where I have my interest in all things ghostly. So even my very first poem was about ghosts in grammar school. So that's what I was going to write. I was going to write in that kind of genre. And so even though I went to school to write for children, my passion really was to write horror fiction or things about ghosts and the paranormal. So when I had my first book idea, when we first got married, it was probably around 1990, somewhere around that, I said, I've got this idea for a book and I'm going to write it, because I had been sending out short stories of children's stories to different magazines. Back in the day, it was very different. You used to have to mail everything, hand type everything, and then you wait for the rejection letter to come in the mail.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's just a click on the computer. You know what I mean? It was very, very different back then. So I decided I was going to write this book, and it took me about a year. And when I was done, I was like, ah, I'm done, put it in the closet and packed it away, because, you know, I got that off my chest, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Started a family with my husband, was a stay-at-home mom. I was that Girl Scout leader, the 4-H leader, the woman who ran the women's group and did the children's play group. I did all of that as a mom. So kind of my life took a different turn for all of those years. Until around 2014, my kids were already full grown, had more independence. So I was able to have more time on my hands. And I reconnected with a high school friend who found out that I had written a book. And he said, damn, get that thing out of the closet and send it into my publisher. And that's really where my new career at the age of 50 started. It was like, wow, okay, now I'm going to see what happens after all these years. And so I sent it into the publisher, and they published it for me, that very first book. And that's where it started. And then when I was writing my second paranormal story, I was in the midst of writing it when I took a left-hand turn and said, I think I want to write true life ghost stories, specifically because I'm that type of person that whenever I go visit another place and we're in a gift shop, I'm always looking for a book on the local ghost stories. And I know Sussex County is haunted where I live. At the time, I owned a gift shop, an antique shop that was haunted. And I thought, wow, I could tell the story about the ghost that's in my shop, and I can tell the story of the ghost that I grew up with and my experience and how I discovered my gifts and how long it took me to really do something with it. And so I put it out on social media, asking people if they had a ghost story around the county that they would like to share, they might end up getting in my book. And so that's how it all started. People were reaching out to me with their stories. And as I said, I was writing at the time just about Sussex County where I live, but I was accumulating folders because I was getting stories from other counties. And I thought, well, these are great stories. Maybe if I save them, I'll get enough to write another book. So after I finished writing Sussex County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena Part 2, I had enough stories for Warren County to write a book. And so that was my third haunting book, Warren County Hauntings and Other Strange Phenomena. And now I'm writing Sussex County Hauntings Part 3. So, I mean, if this is going to keep on going, because I have people now that are fans of mine, and they keep on asking, when's the next book coming out? When's the next book coming out? So I'm kind of like juggling a lot of things. I'm writing Part 3. I'm still writing my paranormal book, and I'm working on a children's series that's with the illustrator right now. So I'm kind of juggling, but never expected to start a whole new career over 50, but here I am doing that. And I feel like I'm busier now than I ever was.
Yeah. I can tell writing several, it sounds like you're doing, working on two books at once, right? Our children's books and the Sussex County three.
Yeah. Well, the children's series is actually, I mean, I have six books in the children's series already, and I've had them done since 2014, but the publisher just was sitting on them for so long and taking forever. And it was really irritating me. And then to get an illustrator is really a pain in the butt. I mean, you think authors are creative, to have an artist is even harder, because you got to light the fire underneath their ass. If they're not ready to move, they're not ready to move. And that was really difficult. So it was very, very hard finding an illustrator. So I finally took it upon myself to took all my books back and have since self-published them, because it's on my time frame and I don't have to wait for anybody else. So I can get the ball moving a little quicker. And I have this wonderful illustrator. She's a young girl starting out, who's going through school. So it's kind of like helping her to allow her to juggle her schoolwork and do the illustrations at the same time. She's moving faster than anyone ever else did. So
getting her experience too, you know, so that's cool.
Yeah. And she's a wonderful artist, and I'm really excited to work with her. And although it's been taking a while, like I said, she's moving faster than anybody else ever did. So I love her work, and we decided we were just going to keep going. And plus, for the children's series, because it's the same characters in each book, but in a different story, I wanted to have the same illustrator, because I want the characters that she's created to look the same in every book, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have Curious George. Curious George is the same in every book. He's just in a different story.
Yeah.
And so that's similar to mine. Janine Bean meets Mavis the Camel is the first book. Janine Bean has a whole bunch of little friends, and they all have their personalities, but they have a specific look to them. And so this illustrator has created who those characters are. And that's why I want to work with her for all the books, because I want them to all look the same.
Yeah.
Which made it even harder. You know what I mean? It made it even harder to work that out. So
stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Alex, co-host of Lo-Five Gaming. Love the crunchy sounds of 1989's Prince of Persia? Pour countless hours into Hades? Did you team up and take down Shredder and Shredder's Revenge? Join my brother Luke and me as we discuss the game of the moment, or travel back in time to cross a classic off our backlog. And because Luke didn't join me for this little promo spot, I'm just going to go ahead and say that even though he's poured over 100 hours into the game, I'm still better at Mario Golf. You can find us in the show notes at lo5gaming.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you make Sussex sound like, you know, that Stephen King fictional town. You know, you know what I'm saying? With all the, is it really much paranormal activity in Sussex and, like, you know, real life, you know, like you come across in your books?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? Pretty much every place has got a town or something in it that's going to be haunted. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It doesn't have to be an old building either, because the property's been there before that building was. So you can have a home that's pretty new, and some people are going, some strange shit is going on in my house and we don't know. Well, it could be because of that property and what was on that property before. Mm-hmm. So you can't fool yourself into thinking that no place is haunted, because every place is haunted. I mean, even New York City is haunted, like crazy haunted. You know how many buildings they have in the city that are really old and have such history behind them?
Yeah,
they're haunted.
I can imagine.
So, you know, I don't mean to make it sound like it's you have to be frightened of the haunted places in Sussex County, because it's not like that. Just because a place is haunted doesn't mean it's scary. You know, the way I like to describe it is a ghost in death is how they were in life. So if you were a nasty and mean person in life, you're going to be a nasty and mean ghost. If you were a loving and kind person in life, you're going to be a loving and kind ghost. And that's exactly what it is you're dealing with. And as a paranormal investigator, you have to respect that spirit, because you would respect another human being. They were humans in life. They're going to look for that same respect back, even in death.
Yeah.
They would, most of the time, they just, you know, you're in their space is the best way to describe it. So you want to respect them.
Yeah. Let's talk about that paranormal investigating. What are some of the cases you ran across? Anything like really bad, or is it just kind of like, you know, normally just somebody feels like a ghost is occupying their house and, you know, they want to know what's up? Or has it been like any like possession, or, you know, what type of stuff do you investigate, or have you ran across?
I guess I could probably just first start off by telling you, like, the group's mission statement is that we are first and foremost there for the spirit. We are there to acknowledge them and get whatever it is that they want acknowledged out and into the open for everybody to hear. And then our second goal is to help the people who are in that building or that home, whether it's to help the spirit move on if they want to move on into the light. And if not, help the family that's living there or working there to be able to have an amicable relationship, so to speak, with the spirit. So there's no misunderstandings, because you are in the spirit space and the spirit does not understand why you're there. And so we are there to let them know what's going on and have them come to an agreeable solution.
So you're like, and then the third part about spiritual mediator, kind of.
Yeah. And the third part of the mission statement is that the group together works as a whole to help each other out, so that we can be our best paranormal investigator selves and learn as and grow as we work together as a family. And so, when we go into a situation, you never know what to expect. You can go into it and it will be paranormal, or we can debunk it and find that it's something else going on in the home. Or it can be a deceased loved one trying to come through, which has happened quite often, that will be at an investigation and the people will wonder what it is. And it's one of their loved ones coming with a message for them, which is really, really cool and poignant when that happens.
Yeah,
but We were speaking earlier about that very first investigation at the Sterling Hill Mine. That was a mine. It used to be a functioning mine at one time, way back when. And just imagine all of the cave-ins and the explosions that caused, you know, people to die.
Yeah.
And it was not recorded. And when they finally did start recording the deaths in the mine, there was probably like about 100 of them, if I remember correctly. So you've got like hundreds of people that have died in this mine. And of course it's going to be haunted. So when we went in for that investigation, this was like an open opportunity for us to really discover spirits and active ones, because they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went on that investigation, we had some really amazing footage that we got, whether it be residual or actual spirit connection. A residual energy is something that plays over and over and over again. For example, we were walking over the grates in the ground, and all of a sudden we all heard dynamite going off in the levels below. Obviously it's a non-functioning mine,
yeah,
so that's impossible, but it did happen. and we did hear it. And that's what you call residual energy. It's the men working day in and day out over and over and over again, because that's what they did. That's called residual.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
And then when we connected with spirit, we were actually connecting with spirits, trying to let us know what happened to them when they died, how they died. But one of them was in an elevator shaft that would take them from one level to another when the shaft roping broke. Another one was an explosion cave-in, that kind of thing. That was really very cool. In fact, from the footage that we got, there was one point in time when we all had our cameras rolling, and we ended up having an interactive communication with this misty kind of smoky fog, and it was responding to our questions. And we got it on camera. And so after we had finished the investigation, everybody kind of sends me all their footage because they know I'm writing about a chapter of the book. And then I'll take all that footage and stuff and put it on my website for my readers. Mm-hmm. When I was going through the footage, I picked out the best footage from that event and I sent it into Paranormal Caught on Camera, Travel Channel's Paranormal Caught on Camera. And they liked it so much and they did a feature on our group on one of their episodes. So that's the kind of stuff that you can get. You can get great video footage. You can get great audio footage. You can get great photographic footage, whether it be like orbs or actual spirit on camera. And then you'll definitely get argument from people out there going, oh, that's pareidolia. Oh, that's not real.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
the
but
light
that,
of the
you know,
camera.
That's okay.
I haven't heard it all. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's okay because I'm not out to convince anybody. I really don't care what they think. All I need to do is convince myself mm-hmm. because I'm there and I know what I'm experiencing. My team knows what we're experiencing. We're there. We're not out to prove anything to anybody else. We're just out to experience it and learn about it ourselves and help, like I said, those spirits get acknowledged and those people that are asking for our help come to an amicable agreement.
Why do you think that is, that some people are very receptive to seeing things like that and some aren't? Because I never seen a ghost in my life, you know, and I'm not exactly closed-minded to it. You know, I don't doubt anything, you know. Even I heard your last radio episode. I was listening and the guy on there about Bigfoot and, you know, he was talking about sightings and people meeting them. You know, I don't doubt any of that, but I have never experienced anything like that. Why do you think some people are more receptive and some people aren't?
Okay. Well, I want to say never, because it doesn't mean it can't happen. It can happen. It just depends on being in the right place at the right time. And when that does, if it does, is usually the time that the person actually becomes a believer, because they'll be like, oh my God, like, holy shit. I never, ever believed any of this stuff before, but it happened to me and I know. And kind of like that story I was just telling you about the mines, the man who invited my team in was the president of the mine, who was a scientist. And he had said to me, I'm a scientist. I'm not supposed to believe in any of this, but I cannot explain what's happening to us and to me in this building where I work in the mines. So it can happen to anyone anytime. And then you asked, how are some people receptive and others aren't? Well, everybody has the ability. It just is, like you said, you have to be open-minded. So if you're already open-minded, that's why I say never say never.
Yeah.
But for more people, some people, it's more prevalent, and that can just be in their DNA, that it runs in their families. And then also, if you've had somebody, like there are team members that I have who grew up in families that have had this going on in their families for generations, mm-hmm. and they knew that their families had this ability. So they nurtured their youngins from young on. And so they taught them to never be afraid of it and to embrace it. In my home, my parents really never talked about anything like that. Doesn't mean to say that they weren't openly receptive to it, because my mother kind of was receptive to stuff like that. I mean, she used to buy the National Enquirer when I was a kid all the time. They had the latest story about Bigfoot.
Yeah,
so I can't say that she was closed-minded to it, because she used to love reading stuff like that. But we never really talked about it. And the only one in my family that I ever knew that had had any experiences with spirit was my older sister. Other than that, I didn't know anything. I just knew I was having stuff and thought it was normal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're a kid, yeah.
So some people have it in their families for generations, and they're more receptive and sensitive to it than others. And it also comes with the nurturing aspect and how well you learn how to work with it. With me, it was kind of like I told you, not spoken about in my home. Not that it was cut off and, oh, we don't talk about stuff like that. We just never did.
Yeah.
And when I had my experiences, oh, you were dreaming. Oh, you were dreaming. I used to have premonitions when I was a kid too, Rocky.
Oh, really?
And my mother would say, oh, it was just a dream. Oh, it was just a dream. And then this one time I had this really scary dream about my godparents, and it was really bad. And I woke up terrified, and I told my mom, I was hysterical crying, it was just a dream. Don't worry about it. And then it came true.
Oh.
And that was really, really rough for a kid like me to have that happen. Here I had this dream that something like this was going to happen. My mom tells me it was a nightmare. Don't worry about it. And then it happened. So as a kid, for a really long time, I blamed myself. I knew it was going to happen. I could have done something about it. Well, now I know. No, you couldn't have done anything about it.
No.
But because of that particular incident, it shut me down. Like, I was shut down for a really, really long time. Yeah. And it wasn't until when I was 30, the day my dad died, that I actually had a reawakening and realized, you've got something here, Eleanor, and you really need to do something more with it if you can. And so that kind of started me on, I don't want to call it the paranormal journey, because the investigative stuff happened even later. I'm talking about my sensitivity to spirit was reawakened. And I embraced it at the age of 30 and said, you know what, I'm really going to learn about as much of this as I can from this point on. And I hear from a lot of people that they start late in life for very similar reasons, because things got in the way of them learning. So, and I've also spoken to people that say it's in God's time. You know, mm-hmm. Everything happens when it's his time, when he wants you to learn. And so, and I'm okay with that. Even if I started later in life, I'm fine with that. I just need to know that now I have this and I'm going to do something with it. And so I've just been jumping and going with the flow, jumping in and going with the flow.
I could imagine that's really scary as a kid. You know, you dream something and then it happens and then you think you called
yeah.
it, you know, you're like,
yeah,
like you brought that into existence. I could imagine.
Exactly. It was terrifying. It was really horrible. Yeah.
So, do you still have premonitions now?
Stay with us. We'll be right back. MuslimsDownUnder.com is sponsored by the Ahmadiyya Muslim Community of Australia. Learn something new from our website or our social media pages, or sign up to meet an Aussie Muslim for some coffee and Islam. If you want to know more about Islam from our sponsors, visit their website, What is True Islam, at trueislam.com.au, a subsite of Muslims Down Under, where we provide resources, articles, and video lessons on various aspects of the teachings of Islam.
I haven't. I have more of deja vu moments than anything, but no, I haven't had any premonitions, which I find really strange, because it's not like I've not been openly receptive to it. You know, if it happened, I would. But for me, what's happened more so is that sensitivity to spirit. I can walk into a building and know if there's something there, know if it's good and know if it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And being around the paranormal team, where a lot of them are way more experienced and gifted than I'm really bouncing off of what they do and learning. It's kind of like we put together a piece of a puzzle and we all kind of play off of each other with these feelings and emotions and energy. And when I have a piece of the puzzle that I put in, It's like, oh, I did that. Oh my God, that was me. You know what I mean? It's like, I can't believe I actually figured that out. Like when we figure things out about that ghost and what they're trying to tell us and where it fits in history. And when I fit that piece in the puzzle, it's just like, I'm a giddy kindergartner because it's like, I did something. It was me for a change. You know what I mean? Not somebody else. So that's what I mean by learning from each other, because that energy is amazing when it's a positive energy. Because you can't have some negative energy. When people come in and they're negative, it just is, it's like you become a Debbie Downer. It's like, oh no, this is not working. So you want everybody that comes in to be positive and in sync, probably would be the best way to describe it, with each other, because then you'll get the best results when you're all on the same page and you're all in sync and you're all there for each other to reach this ultimate goal. It's amazing what you can accomplish. And so I have learned so much in just these 7 years doing the paranormal investigating, because I'm around those people who I'm learning from.
Yeah. Let's talk about your team a little bit. How did y'all get together? Like, did you reach out to them? Are there people you know? Or, you know,
as I mentioned earlier, that very first investigation at the mines when he invited me, and I did not have a team.
Yeah.
What I did was I reached out to people that I had worked with in the past. I used to go away on weekends with my girlfriends. And our idea of a girls' weekend was to go on a ghost hunt. We'd pick a location that we'd want to spend the night in and go.
So you had already. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. And so over the years, you end up meeting other people in the industry. And so when I needed to find people local, there were paranormal teams that I had worked with on these weekend jaunts. And so I reached out to a couple of those people and said, do you want to come to the mines with me? And then I had interviewed in that first year of writing in 2019 for that Ghost True Account book. I had spoken to about 100 people, and there were some really gifted individual people, just ordinary people like you and I, who have grown up sensitive to spirit. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, let me ask if they would like to come, you know, on the adventure. And I mean, I said, I know I'm just somebody who interviewed you, but I have this opportunity if you'd like to come. And I think at the time I had invited 5 people, and 3 women took me up on it in that particular incident. And they stayed on the team from that point on. So we started out with probably like 7 at the time. It's since grown to like 20, because I've been interviewing now I've been interviewing people for the books since that first book came out in 2019. And so I've met and interviewed a lot of other people, and they were like, oh, I would love to go on an investigation sometime. So I kind of write that name in my book. And then when we're going on an investigation, if my gut tells me invite that person, I do. And so they'll have an opportunity to come and get a feel for our group. And I've had people come and go also. Like most of the time I'll invite somebody who's a sensitive, somebody who's had some sort of experience that can contribute to the group. Mm-hmm. But I don't outrule somebody who's just a sponge or loves history. I've had people that I invited because they are like that and do give something to the group and can learn from the group. I mean, I feel like I'm doing something good, because some of the people that I've invited have been extremely introverted and didn't like social situations, but they were really into this kind of stuff. And I kind of would put them, you know, on the spot and say, well, why don't you come out on an investigation? And I remember the first girl that I asked, she was like, really? And I'm like, yeah, why not? And she ended up coming, and she ended up staying, and she stayed with us for a while. So, you know, in a way I was kind of doing something good without even realizing it, because I was helping this person to come out of themselves mm-hmm. and explore something, which, you know, maybe that's the reason I was meant to meet that person. You know, she ended up helping the group for the time that she was with us, and she's since moved on to something else. But people come in and out of your lives for a lot of different reasons. And I just go with my gut. I mean, if my gut tells me, invite that person, I do. And that's how we end up forming our group.
Huh? So I know you said you did the mine investigation, and the owner of the mine was a scientist, and he reached out to you. Do you get a lot of like just people with just, you know, my house is haunted, could you come check on this? Or what's the majority of people you hear from, you know, needing your help?
Yeah, it's people just like that. Businesses or homes that have activity in their building that they can't explain. Oftentimes they'll send me a video. It's the security camera videos that I get a lot, because they've got them going. Yeah. And they'll come across something, or they'll have been up the night before and didn't know what it was. And when they go to check the camera, they're like, oh my God, what's going on? You know what I mean? Or they've had suspicious activity around the house and they caught it on camera. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the stuff that I get a lot. People sending me this, and I would love for you to come in and see if you can figure out what it is. And so that's what ultimately ends up leading to an investigation. Or something's just fall in my lap too. I'll make a connection, and it will be another connection that's led to like a historical society, which I'm all about historical preservation. And people know that from reading my books, because in my books, I talk about the history of the town. And then I talk about the history of the location. And for me, it's all about that landscape of life and the spirits that reside there. So people like that. And when I make a connection with the historical society, a lot of the time they'll have old historical buildings and they'll invite me to come in and do an investigation there. And when that happens, I feel like when I end up writing the book, I'm helping them out too, because a lot of these places are museums now and they run on donations. And so when you draw attention to those museums, it's helping them to be able to keep the upkeep on the buildings and the original beauty to those historical locations that would otherwise fade away when people don't take care of them.
Yeah.
So it comes from all walks of life. And then also word of mouth, you know, I'll make a connection with a reporter from the news. And they'll say, hey, I have this location. I have a connection. I can get you in there. And I'll jump at the chance. I never say no to an opportunity, because you never know where it can lead you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's worked out really well.
That's right. That's a good life lesson.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the camera thing. You know, people say they caught it on camera. I purposely don't check my cameras for that reason. if I hear something... I'm dead serious. If I hear something,
you should pay attention, because you know you might have such great footage and send it into one of those shows, and they pay pretty decent prices for that footage when you send them in.
Yeah, I'm good. you know, if I hear something, I just assume.
Or you can send it to me. You could send it to me, and I'll write about it.
Oh yeah, true. Do I get a writing credit for that or no?
Yeah, but definitely put your name in there and give you credit for it. Absolutely.
No, if I hear something and I can't explain it, I blame it on a kid and I move on. I'm not going back and looking at that footage. I mean, I'm just not.
Oh, and so there's another answer to your question. How come some people are not experience anything? Because some people are scared like you.
Oh, yeah.
They shut it down, and they're like, they don't want to have anything to do with it. So they shut it down. And so because they're so shut to it, they don't sense it.
Yeah, you're right.
That's another reason why.
If it's something that's creepy, I'm like, nope, not even going over there. You know, I'm just not going to bother.
My husband's like the perfect example. My husband's like this believer, disbeliever, right? He'll be like, I don't believe in that. Nah, I don't believe in that. He has an answer for everything. I'll show him something. No, that's not real. You know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But yet he'll be the first person, if he hears like knocks in the house, let's get the priest in here and have them bless the house. You know, I'm like,
yeah.
Really? You know, so he's a believer, disbeliever.
Yeah. I'm not really a believer, disbeliever. I believe, but I just choose not to engage. I just don't want, you know, I don't put myself in those situations where
that's okay.
You know, if I'm going to get haunted, he's going to come find me. You know, I'm not coming looking for him. I can't tell you that.
Gotcha.
So during any of your investigations, have you ever advised somebody like, look, you need to move, you know, or anything like that? Or has it all been pretty, you've been able to,
we did, mediate, we you know? Did. What one investigation that we did in Sparta, it wasn't, we were asking, it wasn't that we were advising them to move because there was anything bad there. We were advising them to move because there was this electrical energy that was, I guess I should start with, they were having these experiences and didn't know what was going on. And when we went there to do the investigation, we ultimately found out that it was their deceased loved ones trying to tell them why they were constantly sick. This couple, they were always sick. And what it was is, I don't know if it had something to do with the power surge or the electrical in that particular vicinity that they lived in and in their home. It was so bad. It's almost like you hear these stories about those electrical power towers that are near houses, mm-hmm. and then people end up having cancer and that all this cancer going, kind of like that, but in this smaller scale. And we were going in and it was all over the place. And then finally, when we get in touch with the spirit, it's the deceased parents of one of the couple and telling them, you need to move from this house. The reason why you're sick is because of all this electrical power shit going on. And so they, one, were thrilled to know that their deceased loved ones were coming to visit them, and two, appreciative that they were telling them why they were getting sick. And so they did. They ended up moving from the building. So that happened with that particular investigation. And then we had another one where the woman kept on insisting, you know, I don't remember the span of time, but let's just say over 40 years of her life, every place she ever lived in was haunted.
Okay.
And that's kind of rare, right? Yeah. It's like, there's something kind of wrong with that. So we go into her home. Now, her home is supposedly haunted and her family is affected by it emotionally, which is not good. Okay. And emotionally in a bad way, which is not good. So we go in to try and figure out what's going on, and it ends up being her that is haunted. And we try and explain that. Now, this has happened to us in several instances.
You mean like where, like a ghost just follows her personally?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and okay. This is why every place that she ever lived in was considered, she thought was haunted, because she was the one that was haunted. And so, and I'm told, when I say her family affected emotionally, I mean, family members tried to kill themselves.
Oh, wow. Like, okay. This just is serious.
Scary stuff. Yeah. And so we've had this happen a couple of times. And in a situation like that, you know, they're asking for your help. So you want to be honest and you want to tell them. So we will tell them this is what's going on and tell them what they need to do to help themselves. But they can only be the ones to take the initiative to get that done. So I believe it happened like three separate times with three separate people. And out of them, one of them did not believe it was them. Nope, it's not me. My house is haunted.
Yeah.
And so she, from what I understand, never went and did anything to help herself. And of course, now she doesn't have a relationship with family and she's by herself and, you know,
so what was that's going to happen? Figure out what was haunting them. Like, why?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Unforgettables are two people who want to share opinions and stories at a high school age. Join us for a monthly podcast and start listening now. Come visit our website, theunforgettables.org. That's UN4Gettables.org.
Well, it's some sort of spirit or some sort of entity, but you need to go to like a specialist, somebody who deals in getting rid of this stuff. I mean, just because we're paranormal investigators doesn't mean that we have that. And we do have people that we know that do that and can refer somebody to, to go and ask for that help. But we're not equipped to handle that kind of stuff, but we can advise who they can speak to help them. But like I said, you know, a person can only help themselves. If you've given them the tools to work with, if they really want to get rid of this and fix it, they'll take our advice and go seek out the help that they need to rectify the situation. And if they don't, then it's just going to continue. And it wrecks lives. It wrecks lives.
So the lady that went and got the help, the one that actually believed you and went and got help, did she reach back out to you like, oh my Lord, my life's so much better now. Thank you. Or
yes.
Oh,
yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And that makes it even more worthwhile too. I do feel bad for the people that don't want to listen though. You know, that like that one woman it was really sad. But like I said, there's nothing you can do if that person does not believe it. And you know what that is? The reason that person is so ultra sensitive that they're vulnerable to stuff happening,
mm-hmm.
which is scary too. But that's when you take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and learn how to control it and how to protect yourself. Mm-hmm. Like even me, I'm not, like I said to you, I'm not nearly as gifted as some of the people on my team, but I take the initiative to protect myself. When I go into an investigation, I always go with God and I say that prayer. I have protective oils that I wear. I have protective stones that I wear. I mean, I'm with them all the time.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really important for you to protect yourself because you never know what to expect.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have had occasion where I've brought something home into my home unintentionally.
Wow.
And
so
I've had to clean my home with sage and salt to tell it to go. Because I mean, I'll leave an investigation and say, no one's allowed to come home with me. You have to stay here, but you just never, ever know. And, but when that initial thing happened where I brought something home, it was earlier on when I was first starting out and I really didn't know about all the protective measures until I was like, oh shit, I really got to start doing something. So I did, I started getting protective oils and the stones and, you know, saging.
How did your non-believer believer husband feel about that one?
You actually I didn't tell him.
Oh, okay.
I didn't.
That's probably the best policy.
I didn't tell him. It was just my daughter and I started experiencing stuff, and we were waking up with sleep paralysis, which is kind of scary.
Ooh,
when you have sleep paralysis, it's like you're sleeping and all of a sudden you feel like something's holding you down, and you wake up and you can't move and you can't scream. That was one of the things that was happening. So I was like, there's no way I was going to tell him because he would make my life miserable if I told him.
Oh yeah,
he would probably make me, or probably make me stop doing what I'm doing. So yeah, I'm like, not going
to
happen.
As long as nothing happened to him, it's probably best to keep it quiet. Because if my wife brought something home, I just don't let me know. I just don't want to know. Yeah.
Exactly.
I lost my train. I had a good question. I lost my train of thought. That's what I was going to say. So this woman that had the ghost attached to her, I don't get that concept because she contacted you, correct?
She did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So why would you're open enough to contact a paranormal investigator and you believe in haunted houses, but when somebody tells you you're the one haunted, that's where you draw the line? Like, you know, it's kind of like,
I think she was okay believing that she had spirits in her home, but not believing that they were attached to her, which I, like you, is so,
that's so weird.
Strange to me.
That is very,
it's
strange.
So strange,
especially since she said
I would be more frightened that it's attached to
exactly.
me than in
and
my
especially
home.
Since she knew for a fact that every place she lived was haunted. So like the proof is there, you know, that something's not right, you know.
Huh. But then when it starts affecting your family, like you're in a relationship and everything is fine and good. And then all of a sudden you get this, because attachments can come and go,
mm-hmm.
and they could be different attachments too. You can have one and then another. And like I said, she was almost like a receptor for it because she was so sensitive. So she probably had different variations of them over time. And so here you are in this relationship and everything is good. And all of a sudden stuff starts to happen. And this man that you're married to he's not the same person that you were with. And your child is becoming so emotionally depressed that they've never were like that before, that they're so suicidal. Like, all of that is just, to me, that's like a ding, 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 ding. Something's not right here. And I understand why you would confuse it and think it's that the house is haunted. Yeah, but because it's been consistent over the years that, you know, that you go through these things, it just, you know, you should be openly receptive to the possibility that it's you. And to me, isn't it better to be safe than sorry? Like, it's nothing for you to try and seek out help to cleanse yourself. Why not do it? Isn't it better to be safe than sorry?
Well, yeah, like I said, I never had any of these experiences, but if somebody was like, hey, I think something's attached to you, I'd probably be like, you know what? I'm going to call Eleanor just to be safe and see what I need to do to get rid of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? Better to be safe than sorry.
That's right. You know, even though, hey, you might be full of it, but why take the chance? You know?
Right.
Yeah. So.
Right. I agree.
So before I get you out of here, I want to ask this. How accurate are movies like, you know, Annabelle and, you know, that whole series and, you know, Poltergeist and, you know, Exorcist, are those pretty accurate interpretations of, like, you know, how, you know, something's actually haunted?
I'm not going to say that there isn't anything scary that can happen, because a lot of scary things can happen. But when you watch movies and you watch paranormal programs, it's over dramatized.
Yeah.
Because it's all entertainment. They're trying to scare you. You're watching it because you want to be scared and they want to scare you. So I always tell everybody a real paranormal investigation is pretty boring. We can be there for hours and have nothing happen. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you personally, I've been on a program and I've been under those cameras. And if something doesn't happen, they want to make something happen because you want to see something happen. So to me, if I'm on a real investigation and we've been there for hours and we get an audio, it's like, oh, we got an audio. You watch a program on TV, they have five audios, they got five spirits, they got all this. It's all for entertainment purposes. It's not realistic in that sense. Don't get me wrong, there are bad things that can happen, but in the movies and on TV, they overdramatize things because they have to entertain you. They have to scare you. That's what you're there for. You're there for that scare.
Yeah. My oldest daughter, she was really into those, Ghost Hunters and, you know, those type of shows, you know? And, I know it's very well edited for something to happen, but I always wondered, like, how long did they sit there before they heard that sound or picked up something on that meter, or, you know, how long was that?
I could tell you when we were behind the cameras, they were there for one night with us, one night. And it was for maybe 6 hours. Okay. And if we hadn't produced anything that was going to be significant, we were going to make it happen. That was all for entertainment.
So when you make it happen, they'll actually just go simulate a sound or something of that effect. Well, I mean, what do you expect?
So
I was watching one of these, though.
Don't believe everything that you see. Like I said, a real paranormal investigation can be pretty boring. But when we get real results, though, that's when it's really exciting. But you can go back to a place three times before you get something. Like, just because you're going to go someplace doesn't mean you're going to actually get evidence or have something happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the more sensitive people that you have there, like, let's just say you have a group of six with you and all of you are sensitive to spirit, all that positive energy usually generates something to happen, because spirits can also be very fickle. They can be very specific and in their choices and their selection of who they want to work with. It's like you picking a handyman for your house. You want to get the best price, the person that you can relate to. It's the same thing. If a spirit comes through, if they don't like you, they're not going to communicate with you. Or if they don't have enough energy to work with what it is that you have, that you're, what kind of equipment or something that you have. Like, I have to use certain equipment. I'm not sensitive that I can hear or see or speak to spirit like some of my mediums in my group. So I'll use a pendulum or I'll use dowsing rods. You know, sometimes the spirit may not have the energy to deal with that. So if they don't like me or they don't like that piece of equipment that I'm using, they're going to go to somebody who can actually hear them or see them. It just depends. You have to make a connection with them like you would have to make a connection with the person.
Yeah. You know, I was watching one with my daughter where it was like, you know, real ghost stories. And I guess they invite families on to tell like their, you know, their ghost stories.
To talk about it.
Yeah, talk about it.
I love that. I love that.
Well, yeah. this one here, these people bought this old farmhouse and it started like right off the bat, you know, stuff start happening. So one thing was an old black man was showing up in the kitchen and he was like trying to mouth words to them. And I mean, it was like everybody in the family was seeing this, like, you know what I mean? It wasn't like one isolated person, everybody in the family. So they did call in a, they called in a priest or somebody, but what it turned out, so the old black man was somebody who was like a, he was either a slave on the land or a worker. He had died there and he was trying to warn them to get out the house because there was a darker entity in the basement. And yeah, so that darker entity showed up and he started doing things. And then the ghost that was trying to warn him disappears. They never see him again. So I, in my mind, I was like, okay, this, you know, whatever's down in the basement is so scary that this man is already dead and he left. You know what I mean? So why are you, even trying? You know, they went and, you know, they got a priest to holy water the house and all that. I'm like, no, you need to move. So this, it gets worse. This entity actually pushed one of them. Yeah. It actually pushed one of them down the stairs. And, I mean, this is their story. They said it pushed them down the stairs.
Oh, they, I believe the pushing it down the stairs.
And,
they do.
They stayed in the house two more years after that. And the final straw was when I think they said the entity, yeah, it was sleep paralysis on their daughter. And like he carved and he tried to carve something into the wall. And that's when it was like, okay, we need to sell the, you know, we're out, you know. But they lived that for two years. First of all, yeah. I wouldn't have made it past the black gentleman that showed up in my kitchen. That'd have been done. Yeah.
You know what happens? Sometimes people go and fall into a financial crisis. Sometimes people put all their funds into this home and it's like they have no choice but to stay there until
that's exactly what the father said.
Which is really sad if that ends up happening, but there are ways to cleanse homes. We had an investigation once before similar to that, that the spirit was angry and didn't want anybody in the house. And he had tried pushing the people down the stairs. And the same thing with the one of the kids didn't want to go downstairs in the basement because he said the mean man said he's going to beat me up. So I was privy to this information before we went into the house because the woman was telling me her story for my book. When we brought the paranormal team in, I don't tell them any of the information that I'm privy to because I want to see if they can pick up on this stuff on their own. Mm-hmm. And then it only kind of collaborates and validates what we already know. And on that particular instance, the one medium said she saw a man beating the shit out of a guy downstairs in the basement. And then the other medium, when he was at the top of the landing, had something try and push him down the stairs. So this woman was really nervous because now she was renting this house out to a couple with their young child. And she was really worried that something was going to happen to the family. She didn't want the child to get hurt specifically. So we had our team member, Jackie Hangley, go in and do a cleansing on the house and a seal. A cleansing is you kick this spirit out and you seal it shut so they can't get back in. Mm-hmm. And so when she did that, the couple, when they moved in with the child, did not have any incidents happening. So she reached out to explain to me, everything's good. We're all good. Nothing happened. So it is possible to cleanse a home and seal it. I don't know if they were ever advised about that on that show or.
Yeah, they just end up leaving. They may not. They just end up having, finally moving. But that's exactly what you said. The the father said they had sunk all their savings in to buy this place. And, you know, he was so much into it. You know, it was his dream home, you know. And
Yeah.
That's sad.
That's really sad.
Yeah, that is very sad. Very sad. Well, before I let you go, you want to tell everybody where they can, you know, if they need your investigative skills or to, you know, where they can find your books.
Sure. Everything about me you can find at AuthorEleanorWagner.com. It has all the links to my books and podcast information. My podcast, Eleanor Wagner's Strange and Scary World on the Paranormal UK Radio Network, and Eleanor Wagner's Creepin' It Real on Coast to Coast Entertainment Network, biweekly on Thursdays. You can email me at AuthorEleanorWagner@gmail.com if you have a really good ghost story you'd like to try and get into my book. I do write chapters on ghost stories around the country and ghost stories around the world, so you never know when your story might get in. And I'd love to hear from you.
All right. Well, thank you, Eleanor. I really appreciate you accepting my invitation.
Thank you for having me, Rocky.
I know. Yeah. And it was a very insightful and awesome conversation. And with that, we'll end it here. And to everybody out there, please be well.